Maverick News presents The Rick Walker Show. Defrag your mind.
Good evening, everyone. It is, what's the date today? April 12th, 2024. You see this shirt? A while back, during the lockdowns, I put this shirt on and I said, I'm wearing this shirt because I don't know if I will ever be able to leave the country again. This was during the lockdowns. This very shirt. And here I am. You see, there's hope. I am out of Canada. I am in Costa Rica, still again today. I've been here for a few days now. I'm checking things out, comparing the level of freedom and the cost of living. I'll tell you more about that again tonight. Justin Trudeau, though, I don't know. He's sort of making a little political prison for himself, it seems, these days. His carbon tax seems to be backing him into a corner. And that's why I'm hearing some people say things like, I think Justin Trudeau might just be screwed. Oh, yeah. And I think that might just be the case because it seems that the support, the political support that he has that is propping up his government from the NDP side, it's kind of evaporating. Remember I said, don't be surprised if there will be an election this year sometime. I'm still sticking to that. I think we may see an election sometime this fall. That's my prediction. I might be wrong. I'm not saying I'm always right. But I think in this case, it's all heading toward that. Well, we'll get into a little bit more of that tonight, too. Also, the world, the whole world, being back into a corner because of this situation in Ukraine and even more significantly, I think, in Gaza, with increasing tension between the United States and Iran. So we'll talk about that too. Lots to talk about tonight as I cue things up here and get ready to get this show on the road from Costa Rica. And I will do just that when we come back on the other side of this. We'll be right back.
Maverick News. The world is watching.
The New World Order. Government overreach. The Great Reset. Mainstream media lies. Now more than ever, independent voices are needed. Donate now at freedomreporters.com. That's freedomreporters.com. Maverick News, the antivirus program for your mind.
Okay, axe the tax, baby, axe the tax. That's the slogan Pierre Poilievre, leader of the Conservative Party of Canada, came up with. He's been running with that. It's building momentum. And something very unexpected has happened in recent weeks, and that is that it seems a large portion of the freedom movement has latched on to the axe the tax slogan. Probably for a few different political reasons, but the impact has been that it has, lit a fire under the whole axe the tax movement. It's become a movement unto itself. There are protests still happening on this, day 12, I think. Now we're seeing these protests in strategic locations across the country. And I'll tell you, what's going on right now, I know for a fact that what you're seeing was not the original plan. Some of you may already know what the original plan was, but this modified plan, which is something that was kind of evolved on the fly as there was, you know, some friction within the people protesting, and some of the people who wanted to do more radical things, I think, were kind of, again, pushed out to the outside. And so, you know, you can find those sore points, if you want to, online. They're out there where you can listen to different people talking about the infighting. But I think overall what has happened is a pretty positive thing, because it shows that just like this shirt, there's hope. There is hope. And what's happening tonight is Justin Trudeau may really truly be screwed, because this axe the tax campaign has legs. Pierre Poilievre is scoring big points with it. The protests on the street are putting additional pressure on. And it's not just the protests. It's the polling. The politicians can see that this is not popular with people. They know it's not popular, including Jagmeet Singh of the NDP. And with this NDP Liberal coalition government that we have, Trudeau can't survive without the support of the NDP. And so what are we seeing today? We are seeing, well, first of all, well, we'll come back to Jagmeet Singh, but first of all, we're seeing this still out in Alberta. It's not huge. These are, you know, they're not getting the numbers that they had originally hoped for at these protests, but they do have passion. And they are applying pressure on this issue. Here's what it looks like today. This is just minutes ago. Alberta.
There we go. Axe the carbon tax. Let's go. Somebody decided to go out on the road. Do a slow roll. And now they're moving over for traffic. Go down and read the signs, guys. Signs, signs everywhere, signs. Looks like they got her slowed down pretty good. Just gonna make 1 minute video, guys, so I can post it. We got her slowed down. Most people are honking. We're all seeing the signs over there. Over here. Yeah, that's awesome.
Good job.
Nice. Good job. All the provinces lined up. The provinces above us, they're above the ditch. Every province, we got the flags out there. Let's go. Let's go, Canada. Let's go, Alberta. Let's go.
Okay, so there you go. That's Freedom George. Putting that out there. We're sharing it here. And that's a good thing, I would say. People exercising their right to free speech, freedom to protest. And I hate to say this, but, you know, again, I have to look at that and I say the system's working. Why do I say that? Because how many days have they been out there now? 12? Now, I don't think I'm not going to encourage anybody to take their kids out there. I don't think the Trans-Canada Highway is a safe place for kids. So if I were anybody going out there, I wouldn't take my kids and I wouldn't take my dog. Not a safe place for something like that. Now, that being said, there are limits to the way and the duration and how people protest. That being said, I think police have been tolerant. Have they shut it down? No. I think some of the people involved wanted police to try to shut it down. I think they were looking for a confrontation. That's not positive. We saw the heckling. I don't think that was positive. The police, government, they're learning. And they've taken a lighter touch here. And I think that's an indication that they're returning to some of the older approaches to policing, community-based policing, tolerance, a light touch, a lot of respect for people's rights, and to give people a lot of latitude in that regard. And I applaud what I'm seeing out there, really, so far on both sides, because the protesters have been peaceful. They're not blocking the traffic. One day and a couple of times in a couple of locations, we've seen incidents where they've tried to slow things down or have actually blocked traffic. And, you know, that's what's going to lead to real friction, real problems, I think. But overall, police haven't even been present out there. And the protesters overall have been, you know, they've been behaving themselves. So it's a good thing. Now, on the political side, what are we seeing in Ottawa? Jagmeet Singh, he seems to be, well, pulling his support from the prime minister. We have Jagmeet today commenting on this, asked about his position on the carbon tax issue, and he has pivoted on this in a major way. And I'm surprised, actually, a little bit by this, but maybe I shouldn't be, because he's bending with the political winds that are blowing strong. Here's Jagmeet on the issue of the carbon tax. Looks like he's got the knife out and is just about ready to stick it in JT's back. This is why the prime minister may be screwed.
Do you want to get rid of the consumer carbon price?
Well, what we want to do is we want to lay out our vision, a new Democrat vision for how we tackle the climate crisis. I don't want the burden fall on working people. So we want to lay out our plan, which addresses the real solutions and using government power to tackle big polluters, and that unites working people together.
So for the consumer price specifically, though, do you want to get rid of it? Do you want to pause it? Do you want to stop the hikes? Like, what are you proposing here?
For our full plan, we're going to release that plan and we're going to present that to Canadians. So we don't have our full plan picked out.
Yeah. Do you want?
Okay. So there's saying NDP, and he's now, our vision is different than Justin Trudeau's. We have a whole different plan. He's pulling his support, folks. Without Jagmeet, there is no government. And this can lead to a confidence vote again in the House. This can lead to an election. This is a wedge issue. At least Trudeau's treating it as a wedge issue, has been treating it as a wedge issue. Poilievre has grabbed a hold of it as a wedge issue. And now The conservatives have been scooping up so much support that Jagmeet is saying, oh my goodness, I cannot continue to support JT. This is political suicide. He knows it. He knows it. And that's why Justin Trudeau is probably screwed on this. And he never saw it coming because he thought that all this climate change talk, the passion behind it, all the propaganda, the narrative would be strong enough to just carry this whole thing through, carry him through to the next election. And he thought that the public would support this because of all the mainstream media spin that comes along with the carbon tax issue and climate change. But when it comes right down to it, the average person, you, I, the people on the street, the citizens of the country, it's not popular. People know that it's not good for us. And the whole, you know, they're going to put more money back into our pockets by taxing us is a non-starter. It doesn't even make sense. It's Justin Trudeau math, which makes no sense. JT's math is upside down, backwards, and inside out. It just doesn't make sense. You don't tax people to give them more money back. It doesn't work that way. Not in the aggregate. So on this issue, JT's in a lot of trouble. So what's he going to do? You've got now this call in the House this week and support for a first minister's meeting online to be even televised on this issue. Will it happen next week? I think they're looking at Tuesday for that. Will it go down? I don't know, man. JT's feeling the heat. He's in hot water. I doubt he'll do it. I seriously doubt it. But he may have no choice because there's so much pressure building on him now on the political side. I have to say, on the part of Pierre Poilievre, whatever he's done behind the scenes, it's brilliant politicking. It truly is. Because he's really backed JT into a corner. Here's Justin Trudeau today at another news conference on housing. And then speaking to the carbon tax issue, though, during the question period of today's news conference. And this is how he responded again. This is why I'm not sure that he's actually going to do this first minister's online TV thingy next week. I seriously doubt he'll do it. I think that he is trying to just ignore this, but he's not going to be able to.
And the NDP is expressing reservations about the carbon tax. What does it signal that you have lost many premiers? And now you may be losing the NDP's support for your plan as well.
I feel for the NDP and for Jagmeet. This is a hard moment. There are political headwinds. There's a lot of political pressure. I'm certainly feeling it. Everyone should be feeling it. By folks out there who are worried about affordability, who are worried about climate change. And I don't know. My perspective is this is a time to actually do more to fight climate change, not less, to do more to put money in people's pockets. And it's not a handful of conservative politicians and premiers that are going to turn me away from continuing the fight against climate change, the fight for a better future, and the fight to put more money in people's pockets. So I don't entirely understand the position of the NDP in pulling back both from affordability measures and from the fight against climate change. But I can assure everyone, this government, my government, will continue to step up on the fight against climate change, will continue to put more money in families' pockets. As of this coming Monday, the 15th, families right across the country in federal carbon backstop jurisdictions will be receiving the CCR in their bank accounts, the Canada Carbon Rebate, that will give them more money up front than they will be on average paying out with the price on pollution. That's extra money for affordability, for groceries, for costs that families are facing. The conservatives are telling everyone they will take away those carbon rebate checks and step back on the fight against climate change. It's unfortunate that their arguments seem to be resonating with the NDP. But this government will continue to be steadfast in putting more money in 8 out of 10 Canadians' pockets with the Canada carbon rebate, particularly middle-income and low-income families, and continuing to fight against climate change. And on the issue of industrial pricing that the NDP is suggesting, that's a great idea. That's why we have it in place. That's why we're doing that. That's why we're making sure that heavy emitters pay for their pollution as well. But it's also why, recognizing that big companies often pass on costs to citizens, that we will be putting more money in citizens' pockets as we continue to step up in the fight against climate change.
Oh my, do you hear the hesitation, the nervousness in his voice? Do you detect it? It's there. He knows he's in trouble. He might just be screwed. Oh my goodness. And I don't know, man. He's backed into a corner on this one, and it ain't looking good for him, not at all. And this was in the House today. Let me recue this here. Okay, here we go. This is more talk about the carbon tax issue in the House of Commons. It's the hot political potato right now, and Justin Trudeau doesn't know how to handle it. New political territory, to be sure. Here we go to the House of Commons. Here we are.
Important act in the context of growing an economy that will thrive in a low carbon future. It will ensure that workers and environmental organizations have a seat at the table when we are discussing Canada's green economic plan. The Conservatives have obstructed at every turn, include introducing 20,000 robo amendments. We are building a strong economy for the future. The Conservatives, by contrast, are engaging in legislative vandalism.
Heather from Newbury writes, people need the cost of living under control now. And Carol from Strathroy says, one more tax will take us down. We're already struggling. To the average Canadian, the cost of the carbon tax on gas, groceries, home heating, farmers and families is punishing, not progress. So will the Prime Minister axe the tax on farmers and help make food cheaper by passing Bill C-234 in its original form?
Honourable Minister for Labour and Seniors.
I thank the Honourable Member for that question, and I would allow Danielle from Foothills to continue with her comments. She also added, I would say that I probably ended up better off with that transfer. She also said, and so I think a lot of people would be of that view, that if you are going to implement some kind of revenue neutral carbon pricing, that's probably not a bad way of doing it. Now, these are the words of Danielle from Foothills. I'm happy to inform Danielle that 2.5 years later, since you made that comment, it is now up to $1,800 for a family of four in Alberta. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member from Lambton, Kent, Middlesex.
Well, Mr. Speaker, even the NDP Liberal Environment Chair admitted that the carbon tax has no impact on climate change. Yet, just last week, the Prime Minister increased the carbon tax by 23%, driving up the cost of gas, groceries, and home heating. If farms cannot afford to grow food, you have failed as a government. And let me remind everyone, no farms, no food. So Prime Minister, help bring the cost of food down for Canadians, axe the tax on farmers, and pass Bill C-234 to
the Honourable Government Speaker.
Speaker, instead of opposing battery plants, instead of standing up against sustainable jobs, that member and her caucus should remember that farmers have the vast majority of the fuels they use, which are tax exempt under the pollution pricing strategy. Farmers in this country are supported big time by adjustment policies because they know more than anyone that climate change is a reality. And with respect to Bill C-234, that member should walk down to the front bench and tell her government, tell her opposition House leader that he should call Bill 234 and we'll resolve it.
Here, here.
The honorable member from Dauphin, Swan River, Nipawa.
This NDP Liberal government is just not worth the cost. Last week, the Prime Minister increased the carbon tax by 23%, driving up the cost of gas, groceries, and home heating. But on Tuesday, the Liberal Environment Chair revealed there is no proof the carbon tax reduces emissions. Quote, there is no data specifically stating the price on carbon resulted in an X amount of reduction in greenhouse gas emissions, end quote. Now that the carbon tax scam has been exposed by Liberal, will the Prime Minister finally axe the tax?
The Honourable Minister for Energy, for Natural Resources.
Speaker, we're on this side of the House are focused on making life more affordable for Canadians, but also on fighting climate change. The PBO and 200 economists across this country have been very clear. 8 out of 10 Canadian families get more money back. It works disproportionate to income. Even the Conservatives actually used to know this before they got collective amnesia. Every one of the members on that side of the House ran in 2021 on a promise to put in carbon pollution. The hypocrisy that comes from that side of the House is unbelievable.
I'm shocked to see gambling going on. On in here. it's a whole new ballgame suddenly. That compilation, by the way, from Global News, in case you didn't notice. a lot said there in a short period of time, 4 minutes, 19 seconds. Very revealing. And, you know, if you really want to know what's wrong with the government in Canada, you just have to listen to Justin Trudeau himself and his Deputy Prime Minister, Chrystia Freeland. This, you don't even have to make an argument. They'll make it for you. This is how screwed he is. He can't even find anything positive to say about himself. Listen to this.
It used to be that the deal was, if you worked hard at a good job, you could afford a home. That doesn't seem the case anymore. Younger generations are worried that they won't have a life that looks like how they grew up, like what their parents, grandparents had. Well, that's not fair.
No,
but today, too many young Canadians feel as if the deck is stacked against them. They can get a good job, they can work hard, but far too often, the reward of a secure, prosperous, comfortable middle-class life is out of reach.
I agree, which is why these two have to go. They're making the argument for their opponents. You don't need to make an argument against them. They'll do it themselves. That's after 8 years of Justin Trudeau and the Liberals in Canada. Stay with me. I've got more coming right up.
The information war is raging. Truth without integrity is worth nothing. Maverick News. Because those who have power and those who seek it must be held accountable.
The world is watching.
Join our family of truth seekers. Donate today and add your voice to the chorus of Maverick Knights. Donate at maverickdonations.com. Truth. Integrity. It's the Maverick way. Maverick News. The world is watching.
We'll be right back.
Maverick News. Fighting for freedom.
Okay, now, on the world stage, Biden commenting very briefly on this situation in the Middle East with Israel. Things not looking good there, folks. What do we have? We have all the players really moving their chess pieces into position. We have the United States moving missiles, ships into position. We have Iran moving their forces into position. All of this coming after Israel bombs the Iranian embassy in Syria. Everything is escalating. This is spilling over. This after the Moscow terror attack, with Putin and Russian authorities pointing their finger directly at Ukraine and also at the United States, saying that the U.S. and Ukraine had direct involvement in that attack. It's not looking good. Not at all. I don't know what else to tell you other than, you know, you can analyze it in a lot of different ways, but, you know, did Israel attack the embassy in Syria to provoke things, to escalate things, to try to draw the United States into a wider conflict directly involving Iran? Perhaps. I'll tell you this, it's certainly going that way. And I'll tell you something else. The reason it's also not looking good is because on that side, on the other side, on the Iranian side, you have Russia, and they will stand behind Iran while the United States stands behind Israel. And this is really, really not good. This is why we are at risk of really, truly, again, a kinetic Third World War. And that is putting all of humanity in jeopardy. It's an existential threat, not just to any of these nation states, but to the entire planet. Here's Biden today at an unrelated news conference, asked at the tail end about this situation with Iran. And all he's saying is, he sends a very clear, but I would say uneloquent message to Iran, just saying, don't. I mean, at least he's trying to say something to prevent, I guess, but I don't think this is very effective. Here he is.
On Israel is from Iran, Mr. President. I want
to get your expectations sooner than later.
Mr. President, are Iran right now? Mr. President, on in this moment.
Don't.
Are American personnel and assets at risk, Mr. President? Mr. President, are American troops at risk as well?
We are devoted to the defense of Israel. We will support Israel. We will help defend Israel, and Iran will not succeed. Thank you very much.
What was your U.S. response, sir?
And that's all she wrote there. I don't know if this guy is all there. He's just, he looked stunned. Not in a good way. Deer in the headlights. That's the look. It's like, at least he managed to get a couple of sentences out. But I don't put a lot of faith in any of what we just saw there. We're in trouble, is what I'm seeing overall. So pray, I guess, tonight. Pray that cool heads prevail, but don't count on it. Here's Donald Trump also making headlines and I guess dominating the news in a way, this time on the abortion issue, which has been the issue that has, I guess, latched onto him in a way, him saying that it should be the states that determine abortion laws. And being attacked, you know, it's a no-win issue really for any politician. And here he is addressing more questions on this today.
A follow-up. Over the last few decades,
pro-choice and pro-life. Which one is it?
But you know exactly which one it is. And when I was in New York and when I was a Democrat also, just like Ronald Reagan, you know, Ronald Reagan was a Democrat, which sort of followed a very similar path. But if you look at what we've done with Roe v. Wade, we did something that everyone said couldn't be done, and we got it done. And I give great credit to the Supreme Court and the justices for having the courage to do it. What they did is very simply give it back to the state. And I'll tell you, the Democrats are the radicals on this because they're willing to have abortions in the 7th, 8th, 9th month. They're even willing, and you can call it what you want, but you go back to governor of Virginia, the previous governor of Virginia, the Democrat governor of Virginia, where he talked about execution of a baby after birth. And you can say what you want, but that's extreme and that's radical. And nobody should have that. And it has to be ended. Please go ahead.
So he's going straight to that to defend his position on the abortion issue. Effective argument. But, like I say, it's a no-win scenario for any politician on that issue, as far as I've ever seen. So it's a landmine issue. That's honestly why he's, in my view, punting the issue to the states and not trying to make it something that would come under federal jurisdiction. That's the way politics works, man. Download the issue if you can onto a different level of government and let them deal with it. It's an effective strategy, generally speaking. We'll see if it works for Trump this time around or any of the other politicians for that matter, because that issue is coming for all of them at some point. And I think RFK Jr. even was asked about, or at least it's coming for him too. There's been some indication of that in this past week as well. So it'll make the rounds to all three of the main candidates. This time there are three candidates, I would say, for sure. I wouldn't put a lot of stock in the Cornell West campaign. And I see that he selected a running mate, one of the founders of Black Lives Matter. So is that going to work for him? Overall, I would say probably not. Not if he was running a serious campaign and seriously wanted the presidency. He wouldn't have selected a running mate like that. That is a divisive kind of candidate. He's just there to make political statements and probably scoop up a bunch of campaign money too. That's the Cornell West campaign in a nutshell from my perspective. Now, what else do we have for you tonight? We have the Titanic film crew, which was drugged in 1996. There's a new report out from the Nova Scotian Privacy Commissioner, the province of Nova Scotia. A lot of that film was filmed in Halifax, Canada, Titanic. And a bunch of the crew members back in 1996 were drugged. There's a record of this. They had to go to the hospital, about 80 of them. Apparently, some of the food that they had been eating was laced with PCP, which is angel dust. So the Privacy Commissioner, for whatever reason, I'm not exactly sure why, but there's a new report out from the Privacy Commissioner, and the Privacy Commissioner is now calling on Halifax Police to release more information about what happened to make it public. So we may learn more about that, and I'm not sure what the significance of that is or why that might be in the public interest or the interest of the victims. But there must be something more to this story that we have not been told. So keep your eyes and ears open for that one, boy, ladies and gentlemen, because, boy, I'll tell you, that's a tabloid story and a half, isn't it? PCB-laced lobster. Even James Cameron, the director of the Titanic movie, was taken to hospital that night back in 1996, where some of the crew members were laughing, others were crying, so a lot of them were throwing up. There was a report of a conga line at the hospital because all these people were jacked up on PCP, but it wasn't safe, I guess, and some of them got pretty sick. So maybe we'll get more information that might lead to other charges. I don't think there's any kind of statute of limitation on an incident like that. So all these years later, we may see something come of all of that and that investigation. I don't know. Back to the Middle East here for a moment, where we are seeing the Iron Dome this evening put to the test, a severe test. Israel's Iron Dome under attack by Hezbollah. This is what it looks like, folks. This is not unusual. This is what goes on all the time. And I have to say that I see some of the people posting this and sharing this tonight who are on the Palestinian side of things in terms of support, I'm cheering this on. I'm not cheering any kind of attack on either side. This is scary. And that's what it looks like. That is what it is like to live in Israel. So there you are, sitting out on your patio at night, and to have a soft drink while you're trying to look up at the stars, and instead of stars, you're seeing detonations as missiles or rockets from Hezbollah are being intercepted and taken down. And you pray that none of them get through and kill anybody. And that's what's going on over there this evening. Now, in Toronto, we also saw today some sort of during the day today, an attack on a police officer who was stabbed in an incident. And that officer treated, I guess, not life-threatening as far as I know, but the suspect was shot. Let me see if I can. Yeah, here it is here. Oh, no, I lost my tab on that. Hang on, I'll get it back. Pretty crazy incident overall. Yeah, it was an officer stabbed. The suspect was shot in Toronto. My tab's not coming up. Here we go. Yeah, police struggled with this guy was outside of Tim Hortons. Anyway. Suspect was shot. It doesn't appear at this point that anyone was killed. Fortunately, both the suspect and the officer being treated this evening. And if we get more information on that, I will let you know. CSIS, the director of CSIS, the Canadian Security Intelligence Service, back testifying at that inquiry into foreign interference in Canadian elections and Canadian politics. CSIS Director David Vigneault says the agency had intelligence before Canada's 2019 election that China's government was attempting to funnel about $250,000 through a network in an attempt to interfere in Canadian elections. So this, after lengthy testimony, days and days of testimony, the director of CSIS, and this, you know, plays right into everything we're seeing here in Canada with Trudeau. This is also why he's not very popular. Criticized by Pierre Poilievre, not really reading. Yeah, not really. Pierre Poilievre criticizing Trudeau for not reading the intelligence reports and relying only on verbal briefings on the risks and the status of foreign interference. And there's extensive evidence to show that China in particular is very active in Canada on the information warfare front and on the in the area of trying to influence elections, even by getting money, funneling money to candidates that they favor. So there's, I don't think there's any denying any of that at this point. And for Trudeau to continue to downplay it is just hurting him even more. And now on the U.S. side, we are seeing the FBI, FBI Director Chris Wray, come out and say that China has 50 times more active information agents, information warfare agents, than the United States does in its intelligence services. 50 times more. That's how aggressive they are globally on the information warfare front. And I don't think that should surprise anyone. All these governments are actively engaged in it. And it is probably, in my view, the most important front in this Third World War, because it truly is already a Third World global war. And Israel's losing that war, for sure, on the public relations front, information warfare front. Ukraine is also losing on that front. And that is why Ukraine is in so much trouble. Because I've said for, since the beginning of the conflict there with the Vladimir Putin special military operation, I've said, you know, the main objective, I would say, on the information warfare front here in North America, in Canada and the United States, is to undermine support for the war so that support for funding is undermined. You cut off the public support using information warfare and you get what you got right now. You have a situation where funding additional aid for Ukraine is being blocked. And who's it being blocked by? Donald Trump, MAGA, conservatives, Congress. And without that funding, we've seen statements from generals in Britain and Canada within the last 48 hours saying that Ukraine could fall within weeks if more military aid, more spending is not provided. So, of course, the pundits are all cranking it up. They're jacking things up and putting it into high gear on the information warfare front. And, you know, I get it. I totally get it. And there's some truth to what they say. And there's a lot of propaganda, half-truths, narratives spun up, all of it designed to achieve a particular political result. I'm just telling you that that's the objective. Undermine support so that you undermine support for the funding. You clip that funding, you end the funding, there ain't no war. So you can win the war without firing shots, or a lot fewer shots, because now your opponent doesn't have anything to fight back with. That's the situation we are now facing in Ukraine. I think it's actually cruel what's going on, to be quite honest with you, because the United States, Biden, Anthony Blinken, made promises to Ukraine. We're with you to the end. Well, we're there for you no matter what. Whatever it takes, we'll be there for you. And are they there right now? They made promises they just don't seem to be able to keep. Now they're leaving them pants down and defenseless. And a lot of human beings, and they are human beings, ready to be slaughtered. And let's hope and pray that some resolution can be found before it comes to that. That's why the Pope, seeing all of this coming, has encouraged Zelensky to find the courage of the white flag. It just seems sick to me to see the United States again abandoning a country that it claims is an ally, not providing the support that was promised. But that's because in a democracy, and the United States is not exactly a democracy, but you know what I'm saying, in a country where the political winds change and you can have a change in leadership, policies change as well. And even in this kind of system, there can be political pressure applied from the opposite side. And that's what you're getting on the U.S. side. You've got the Democrats pushing for more. You've got the neocons pushing for more on the Republican side. But MAGA, no. they don't want any more money going to Ukraine. And so the funding has been cut. So now this war, it seems, is maybe just going to go turned off because there won't be any more missiles, no more guns, no more bullets, no more bombs. At least not enough, not enough shells, not enough drones. We'll see. We'll see. Tragic again, all the way around. Too many Russians dead, too many Ukrainians dead, too many people dead. And for what? Politics. Seems to me there are always solutions to these problems. War is the path of last resort for politics. It's when politics breaks down and people stop talking to each other, and it's beyond tragic. So many lives lost, so many futures, so many families broken apart, destroyed, so many children now without parents, fathers. And so, too, is that the case in the Middle East. Senseless. So, all of that plays into what I'm about to talk about here in Costa Rica when we come back. I'm going to talk about globalism, the economy, and whether there truly is more freedom here in Costa Rica. As I'm told, a lot of Canadians and even some Americans are finding their way here to escape the tyranny of their governments at home.
The information war is raging. Truth without integrity is worth nothing. Maverick News. Because those who have power and those who seek it must be held accountable.
The world is watching.
Join our family of truth seekers. Donate today and add your voice to the chorus of Maverick Knights. Donate at maverickdonations.com. Truth. Integrity. It's the Maverick way. Maverick News. The world is watching.
Okay, so, see that? That's my passport. You know what that is? That's my ticket home, baby. That's my ticket home. You know what this also is? This is proof, positive, that these people who tell you Canada is a myth and it's not a real country, they're lying to you. It's a great big lie. They're telling you that Canada's a lie, that the United States is a lie, that sovereign states are a lie. No, they're lying to you. Do you know why? Because of this passport. This is a ticket back into the country where I have rights. I also have privileges because I pay taxes, because I'm a citizen. And even if I don't pay taxes, I still, as a citizen, have the right to re-enter the country and live there and take advantage of all of the services that we as a collective society provide to each other, because that truly is what the country is. It's a group of people who come together under a constitution, and we do have one. I have a copy that sits right beside me on my desk back in the studio. It's always there. Healthcare, roads. They pick up my garbage every Tuesday. Police. If I need the cops, I dial them up. They come. Services. That's what government is supposed to provide. No question, our government's out of control because they are providing far too much. They want to control our lives. There's way too much overreach. We've seen them do that. We saw it, you know, during the pandemic. Big, big problems. But, you know, that is something that's even present here in Costa Rica, where yesterday I told you that after speaking to a lot of the local people here during the pandemic, they told me lockdowns everywhere, businesses shut down here, people forced to get the thing in the arm, just like back home. Not really any different, not from what I've been able to ascertain from everything that I've seen here. Now, here's the other thing that I've noticed. I've been talking a lot about electric vehicles, electrification of the auto industry, why I think that it's insane, why our government's approach to it probably is not going to work in the long run. And you know why? Because they're driving it with government initiative, government money, which is actually our money, but they're dumping billions and billions and billions, unprecedented levels of funding into these automotive companies. And this is just one of the industries that I'm familiar with. So I talk about that a fair bit, but this is, it goes beyond that. It goes into other industries as well. But in this particular case, I'm talking about cars again, because as I've been out here on the streets, checking things out, do you know what I'm seeing? I'm seeing Chinese cars. BYD, which is now a bigger company in countries like China, moving into Australia, getting into Europe, already here in Costa Rica. It's a Chinese company backed by Warren Buffett, bigger than Tesla. They produced more cars, electric cars, in the last quarter than Tesla did. China. BYD on the streets here, and they are inexpensive cars. Cars here in Costa Rica seem to be fairly inexpensive, less expensive than they are back in Canada. Maybe comparable, maybe a little bit less expensive than they are in the United States. I have to do a more accurate price comparison. But the point is, our governments are dumping billions and billions and billions and billions of dollars into companies like Ford, well, Volkswagen too, I guess, in Canada. You know, some of these bigger names, Chrysler, General Motors, of course, but I'm not so sure that it's going to work because they're not taking into account the global nature of the industry and the economy in general. Globalism goes far beyond just Justin Trudeau and our government. It's in every country, including the BRICS nations. It's just that they want to divide it up and they're trying to assert their own control through the establishment of their own currency, which is an assault, a direct assault on the US dollar and Western capitalism. But don't make any mistake about it. Those BRICS nations are engaging in exactly the same darn thing. It's capitalism. Mercantilism, in the case of China, but it's capitalism and mercantilism and free markets in the international sense that are, you know, that's what's, you know, fueling the economic growth on the Chinese side. They're trying to sell their products and dominate markets all over the world. They are globalists as well in their own right. And that's what I'm seeing on the streets right here. The point is, we can dump all the money we want into these industries, but unless the systems are set up and they're run efficiently, you can try and drive these things all you want domestically. But if you're engaged in a global market, and we are when it comes to electric vehicles in particular, the auto industry in general, if you're not competitive, you're dead in the water. So they better darn well get it right. And so far from what I'm seeing, they're not getting it right because you have costs that are running too high on our side, efficiencies, economies of scale that are just not there. That's why BYD has already overtaken Tesla. We're also seeing the stock price of Tesla drop dramatically over the past year. We're seeing the rise of other companies like VinFast out of Vietnam producing vehicles now. Here I am in Costa Rica and I'm seeing all these Chinese cars. Not dominating everything. There's a lot of Chevys down here too. Some General Motors stuff going on in this market. I'm going to do some more exploring and get back to it all for you. And I'll have more reports on this when I get back to Canada as well. I'm shooting some video while I'm down here. So I'll have a lot more to say about it when I return home. And I'm eager to get to return home. And please don't let these people who hate our country burn it to the ground while I'm gone. Okay, I want to come back. I need the country because I want to come home. And I do love it back home. Truly do. As nice as it is here, I honestly have not seen any advantage to living here at all, other than in the winter, there's no snow, which is okay with me But so far, I haven't found the extra freedom that people are being promised, as some people are trying to sell you retirement packages to come down here. And the first thing that I noticed when I got off the plane at the airport here was brand names like Waldorf Astoria, Christie's, Remax. Real estate company is all over the place down here. So it's, a brand that is prominent in Canada and the United States. And, you know, the funny thing that I don't know, what comes to mind as I sit here in Costa Rica, I think of Cuba before Castro. It's not quite like that because you don't have all the casinos in the same way. And, you know, I don't think you have quite the level of organized crime and the mobocracy. The corporate mobocracy, whatever it was, you know, back in like the pre-Castro days when you had organized crime kind of running a lot of the resorts and the casinos and all the stuff that was going on in Cuba at the time. And there was a lot of money flowing around down there for sure. Which is also, you know, why, you know, so many people kind of resented, I think, people in Cuba, why they resented what was going on and how they viewed America at the time, because it was a playground. They treated it like a playground. It was like, before I was born, but from everything I've learned about it, it was sort of like Sin City, right? So it's just like Vegas, bright and shiny on the outside, but oh, so dirty on the inside. Now, that, I'm not saying Costa Rica is quite like that. I'm only making reference to it because I see the Western business influences here. These brand names, as soon as you step off the plane, it's Western money. And I think that's, you know, overall okay from what I've seen, because it is fueling growth and people are, they're being employed. They're getting, you know, there's gainful employment. People in the tourism industry here, you know, they seem to be making, you know, fairly decent money. I've seen much worse in other countries. So I think it is lifting people up here. And that's a positive thing. But there's still a lot of work to be done from everything that I've seen here in terms of lifting people out of the economic doldrums or even poverty in some cases, because only 55% of the people here, as I understand the statistics, actually have gainful employment. So there's a lot of work to be done. Could you imagine? Well, yeah, I can actually in Canada, the number of people that it would take to, you know, you get into even 10, 15, 20% unemployment, that's depression levels of unemployment historically. So you get into, you know, where 45% of the population doesn't have a job, of the eligible workforce, that's serious. And that's ongoing. So not cool, not cool. A lot of work to be done to help the people. So God bless them, and I hope that things continue to improve down here. I see cranes all over the place, so they're building, and that's a really good thing. And, you know, back home in Canada, we've got our problems too, and I think on the U.S. side as well. Got to get that economy back on track, and that's coming full circle. Back to that carbon tax. It's about cost of living. It's about affordability. Cheap energy, man. We should have cheap energy. And that comes back to the wars, and it's all tied together. And all I can say is Canada, the United States are real places because the people support it, because we vote, because we do have a voice, because it is still a democracy, even though some people try to tell you that it isn't. And there is hope. As bad as things got during the pandemic, look at me. I am finally out of the country. I have left and I'm going to go home. I've got my shirt on, my fancy shirt, my tropical shirt. See? We got through it. I'm out. We're not entirely out of it. We've still got problems. They could do things to us again. But Look what look at the situation JT is in now. Look, they're listening. They're afraid. Not afraid because of all this talk of, you know, an uprising and blah, 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 blah. No, they're afraid because they know they're going to lose the next election if they don't do something to respond to what people really want. That ultimately is what it comes down to. Now, I know that the defense minister, the safety minister, the defense minister, Bill Blair, said, you know, that they're looking at the military in some sort of a clip in this past week talking about, you know, using the military for civil defense. Yeah, you know why? Because there are some people out there threatening the government. I got the clips, man. You've got the clips. You've seen the clips. You know exactly what I'm talking about. What do you expect them to do? If you've got a bunch of people threatening the government, they're going to respond, aren't they? They're going to defend their position, their power, and the system because they don't want it torn down. And if you've got some people out there who are going to get radical, and the government's going to take some steps to defend things, aren't they? But that's not what we've seen on the streets, is it? No, again, I'll tell you why. Because the system is working. The cops learned. They got to go back to basics. Take a light touch. They haven't been back to those protests the way they were. They haven't shut them down, have they? No. They're letting the people protest. Even though, I'll tell you right now, they are breaking some laws. They'll tell you otherwise. We're not doing anything wrong. Yeah, they are. They're doing a bunch of things wrong. They're violating a bunch of bylaws. They're violating some provincial laws. There's no camping allowed in those rest stops. So the cops could go down and shut them down. They could quite easily, but they haven't because they're doing what cops are supposed to do. They're supposed to analyze things and exercise some discretion. And there's the spirit of the law and there's the letter of the law. Good cops know the difference. And I think in this case, out in Alberta and in other places, they've looked at this and yeah, they did line up in the ditch and they were heckled by the protesters. And I think they were trying to egg them on because I think some of those guys wanted a confrontation with the cops, honestly, because they knew it would look really, really bad for the cops. Cops couldn't win in a confrontation like that. They'll lose the information war. The PR war, for sure. So the cops have backed off, man. Rightly so. Wise. Wise. They're not hurting anything in there. Let them protest. Let them wave the flags. And I'll tell you this. As long as you're waving the flag and you're pro-Canada and you love the country and you're doing it out of patriotism because you want to fix things and you want to make things better, you want to fix the system and improve upon it, and if you're really there because you want to get rid of the tax, I'm with you. If you want to burn that thing, you want to tear it all down, you want to do radical, crazy things, I'm not your guy. Because that's crazy. And it's not needed. Because, like I've been saying for a long time, the system can and does work. It's designed to self-correct over time because of the people. Because we do have a government of the people, even though we're being told by many people that we don't, we do. And they're listening to you, to all of us. They're responding. Now, I can't guarantee what's going to come. Of course, when you get the next government in there, you're dealing with a bunch of politicians. Is Pierre Poilievre going to do the right thing if he gets elected? Is Jagmeet Singh going to do the right thing if he gets elected? I kind of doubt it. He'll probably take things in an even more radical direction. He's just flapping his gums because he knows that the people are upset. And now suddenly this carbon tax that he has been supporting, and make no mistake, he's very much in favor of this globalist climate change stuff. So don't think that if you vote for him, he's going to give you any kind of another solution. Poilievre, I don't know. He's taken everything in Canada back to a more of like a Stephen Harper, true conservative approach to governance. Okay? So there's, I think, real hope there. I'm optimistic about it. He's taken the party back from the progressive wing and he's pulled it back over onto the conservative side. That's what I'm seeing. You're seeing a return to fiscal conservatism. Again, that common sense branding, which we've seen with conservative governments across Canada over time, like the Mike Harris government in Ontario, the Harper government, that common sense idea and idealism, that's what they're running on again. That comes down to fiscal conservatism, responsibility, being prudent with money, lower taxes. That's the conservative hallmark. And that's what we're getting back to. And that's because they're listening to us. So I got my shirt on. And I'm feeling pretty good about things overall. So let's keep it all peaceful. Keep it positive. Keep it pro-Canada. And we're going to win. Because we are winning. Finally. Making some progress. So it seems, anyway. Still a long road to go to that next election. But that's the solution, folks. Put the pressure on. Play the politics. Get involved. Change the policies within the parties. And that will then translate into revised fiscal policies and legislation that can fix all of this. Because all the bad things that have been done can be undone. Because these are not constitutional changes that they've made. These are just legislative. And even these international agreements with the World Health Organization and the WEF and all of that can all be changed. The stroke of a pen and a vote in the House, we can change it all. They're listening. And with that, folks, I'm going to bid you adieu from Costa Rica on this 12th day of April, 2024. Thank you, everybody, for hanging out with me here tonight. Another abbreviated version of Maverick News with Rick Walker. But I will be back tomorrow night, 6 p.m. Eastern time. Maybe 7, no, probably 7 p.m. Eastern time again. It seems to work better overall down here, away from the studio, as I prepare for another broadcast tomorrow night. I love you guys, and keep the home fires burning. I'll be back. Catch you tomorrow on the flip side.
This has been a Maverick Multimedia Production.